The hour is approximately 1:40, and the date is Wednesday, March 28, 1984. The place is room 124, the judiciary hearing room located in the Capitol Building in Juneau, Alaska. Present for the hearing today are all members of the committee of reception, Representative Malone and Representative Wimpy. Scheduled matters of interest before the committee today are House Bill 562, an act regarding the service and process in cases involving domestic violence, and House Bill 626, an act relating to crime of conspiracy. As you'll note, that 626 is the only bill before you. We had a committee substitute developed, which was delivered to the committee about an hour ago, 4562, which failed to answer the questions that have arisen between the troopers and the city of Anchorage, the police department of Anchorage. If you review that bill, we looked at the contractual obligation, how those things were going to shift. We haven't worked out that accommodation yet, so we're going to let the two roosters fight it out before the committee gets involved. So we'd like to go to 626, and Gail Horesky is the only one signed on the sheet and is here today to make comments on 626.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dale Horesky. I'm with the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Regarding Representative Lisa's bill, House Bill 626, what this bill would do would add some additional sections to existing Alaska statutes in the criminal code to authorize prosecution for a crime which does not now exist in the state of Alaska, and that is the crime of conspiracy. The federal statutes and most of the states have conspiracy crimes. They differ in their coverage somewhat. This provision that was before you right now, ladies and gentlemen, is basically the version of the conspiracy statute that was initially proposed in the tentative draft for the Alaska Criminal Code when it was revised in 1977 and 78. The conspiracy section was not adopted at that time when the rest of the code was adopted. There was, I understand, some controversy about whether Alaska needed a conspiracy statute. We are now able to reach some of the conduct that would be covered in the conspiracy statute by using the existing statutes of solicitation and attempts to commit a certain crime, such as murder or robbery or whatever it is. There is, however, some definition, there's some difference between what you can cover under the attempt statute, for example, and what you can cover under a conspiracy statute. Under our laws, to show it's the intent or attempt, I have to prove that a person acted with intent to commit a certain crime, and also that he or she took what is called under law a substantial step toward the commission of that crime. Depending on the facts of the case, if someone is meeting with other people and merely planning a crime, but they have not yet actually gone out and bought the gun or actually put the person's apartment under surveillance that they're going to knock off or something like that, you may not have your substantial step that would justify an attempt to prosecution. The conspiracy statute, which the meat of it appears on page one of the bill, requires three things. It requires that a person act with intent to promote or facilitate the crime. So he has to, in his mind, have the objective intent to commit the murder or commit the offense of drug trafficking or whatever offense you're speaking of. He also, second requirement is that he has to agree with one or more persons to engage in this behavior. You can't conspire with yourself. You're talking about at least two, maybe, you know, 7 or 20 people getting together and making an agreement. And the third and final requirement is that the offender or one of the persons in the conspiracy does an overt act in furtherance of the conspiracy. Many other state conspiracy statutes do not have the final requirement, which is the overt act. The overt act was, however, included in the tentative draft version, and we put it in here. So that means that in planning and intending is not enough. One of the people, one of the 20 or one of the three, has to do something which starts the ball rolling toward commission of the crime. The overt act requirement, however, is lesser than the requirement that you have to show under existing law under attempt, where you have to show, quote, substantial steps, unquote. It's not easy for me to give an example of what would be an attempt and what wouldn't be conspiracy. It would depend on the facts of the given case. But there is case law from other states which indicates that the overt act requirement is lesser than the attempt requirement of a substantial step. There are some subsections which provide that certain things are not a defense to a crime. For example, the defendant belongs to a class of persons who is legally incapable of committing a crime. That crime, let me just give you an example of that. Under existing law, husband cannot be convicted of raping his wife with the exception of two circumstances. One is if physical injury is caused, or the other is if they're separated at the time of the crime. So a husband is legally incapable of committing the crime of rape against his wife. If the husband were to conspire with another person so that the two of them would commit the crime of rape against the wife, the husband could be prosecuted for conspiracy to commit rape, despite the fact that if he committed the rape himself, he would not be able to be prosecuted unless they were separated or physical injury occurred. The other exception that is not a defense is that one of the persons with whom the conspirator conspires is not guilty of the crime because of lack of criminal responsibility or unawareness of the criminal nature. In other words, if I have a person who's insane and I know he's insane, he's just got out of API, and I conspire with him to commit a crime, it may be that the insane person couldn't be prosecuted because he was insane, but if I conspire with him to commit murder or whatever, I'm guilty of the conspiracy, even though that person couldn't be prosecuted for the either conspiracy or the ultimate crime. There is a section on page 2 which allows a person to raise a defense of renunciation. In other words, if they conspire and then later on decide, hey, you know, this is not a good idea, I want to get out of it, they can get out of it if they show renunciation. And this language is virtually word for word from existing statutes, the renunciation that is allowed both to an attempt and to solicitation under existing law. There's a public policy interest in, once a person has taken the first couple of steps down the road, letting them draw back and warn law enforcement officers or take steps to stop the crime and therefore insulate themselves from criminal liability. The interest, of course, is to stop the crime before it happens, and this would encourage that result. The penalty provisions are set out on page 2. Similar to both solicitation and attempt, a conspiracy to commit a certain crime is one grade lower than the crime for which you're attempting to conspire. For example, if you're conspiring to commit murder, which is an unclassified, the conspiracy is an A felony. If you're conspiring to commit burglary, which is a B felony, conspiracy is a C felony because it doesn't drop down to a misdemeanor level. But with that exception, it's all one class lower. And there's a definition of illegal activity, which is all felony assault, D and A property offenses, bribing officials, riots, certain drug offenses, the very serious ones, and also bootlegging conspiracies, bringing in liquor into a dry area against a local auction. Many of these other provisions are technical and talk about statute of limitations and multiple convictions being barred. They are taken virtually word for word from existing law, and what it is we're fitting this into the scheme that already exists both for solicitation, and for attempt. It's a very complicated area. I'm trying to capitalize it for you. Please, if you have any questions, I sure be glad to get into more detail.
Virginia Bird?
Gail, do you support the bill?
Yes, ma'am.
Like it is?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Virginia Hayes?
I suppose another type of conspiracy would be, for somebody in the state of Alaska, conspired with somebody in the South 48 to bring people into the state to prosecute them. That would be a conspiracy. Covering this as well.
I don't know if it would be covered under this because there are only certain things that are illegal activity. Depends on where the prostitution stuff is located. If you just bear with me a second, I'll look that up real quick. It may come under that 1161 chapter. Oh, no, that's the nothing left.
It doesn't mean.
Okay, no, no, a prostitution ring would not be covered under this one, as drafted now.
It would have to be wholly located in the state to do that, right?
No, that's not the problem, sir. The problem is that on pages 2 and 3 of the bill, on the bottom it says, in this section, illegal activity means. The conspiracy bill only applies to people that conspire to do illegal activity. And illegal activity is only as defined in 1 through 6 in subsection 8. It would be easy enough to put 7 in there to cover that, but it is not now covered. The attempt was to cover things that were very serious, like, you know, murder and stuff like that, drug offenses. But there's no reason why you couldn't cover less serious stuff.
Representative Burns?
Chairman, move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill number 626, an act relating to crime of conspiracy, be moved to the committee.
Is there objection? There being none, House Bill 626, an act relating to crime of conspiracy, will move to the committee today. Happy to have that. Thank you so much, Gail.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And there's nothing. Further comes for the committee this time to spend dreams of 1 billion months.
Thank you. Before you take off, thank you for having a talk.
Oh, thank you.